thinks that their ma's the best cook in the world. I thought so too, until I went to live on my own. I realised then that my ma's a shite cook, so I've started to make the tea. The old man sneers at rabbit food, but I think he secretly enjoys my chilies, curries and casseroles. The old girl seems vaguely resentful at my encroachment into what she sees as her territory, the kitchen, and bleats about the need for meat in a diet, but I think she enjoys the scran and all. However, the pain is being replaced by an ugly, stark, black depression. I've never known such a sense of complete and utter hopelessness, punctuated only by bouts of raw anxiety. It immobilises me to the extent that I'm sitting in the chair, hating the TV programme, yet I feel something terrible will happen if I try to switch over. I sit bursting for a pish, but too feared to go up to the bog in case there's something lurking on the stairs. Sick Boy had warned us about this, and had experienced it in the past myself, but nae amount of pre-warning or previous experience can fully prepare you for it. It makes the worst alcohol hangover seem like an idyllic wet dream. My heart is breaking, woohoo. The flick of a switch. Thank God for the remote control handset. You can move into different worlds at the press of a button. When I see her holding the replacement of worn-out sports equipment, the guy says something about a glaring lack of comprehensive detailed input and output measures which can be aggregated to enable the benefits to be evaluated and validated at an area level in terms of their effectiveness and efficiency, and this is something which the taxpayer, who after all will have to foot the bill, will... Coffee, Mark? You want a coffee? Ma asks. I can't respond. Yes, please. No, thanks. I do and I dinny say nothing. Let Ma decide whether or not I should have a coffee. Devolve or delegate that level of power or decision-making to her. Power devolved is power retained. I got a nice wee dress for Angela's wee yin, Ma says, holding up what could indeed only be described as a nice wee dress. Ma doesn't seem to realise that I don't know who Angela is, let alone the child who will be the intended recipient of this nice wee dress. I just nod and smile. Ma's life and mine's shot off on different tangents years ago. The point of contact is strong but obscure. I could say, I bought a nice wee bit of skag off his seekers, mate. The buck-tooth cunt whose name escapes me. That's it. Ma buys dresses for people I don't know, I buy skag for people she doesn't know. Feathers growing a moustache. With his close-cropped hair, he will look like a liberated homosexual, a clone. Freddie Mercury. He doesn't understand the culture. I explain it to him and he's dismissive. The next day, however, the moustache is gone. Feather now, can he be bothered growing it? Claire Grogan singing Don't Talk to Me About Love on Radio 4th and Ma's making lentil soup in the kitchen. I've been singing Joy Division's She's Lost Control in my head all day. Ian Curtis, Matty, I think of them intertwined in some way, but the only thing they have in common is a death wish. That's all that's worth mentioning about that day. By the weekend, it isn't quite so bad. Si had got us some blaw, but it was standard Edinburgh hash, which is generally shite. I make some space cake out of it, and that improves it. I even get a bit trippy in my room in the afternoon. I still didn't feel up to going out, though, especially to the fucking Dockers Club with my ma and feyther, but I resolved to make an effort for their sakes, as they needed a break. Ma and feyther seldom missed a Saturday night at the club. I stroll self-consciously down Great Junction Street, the old man never taking his eyes off us in case I tried to do a runner. I run into Mally at the foot of the walk, and we crack away for a bit. The old man intervenes, ushering us along, and looking at Mally as if he wanted to break this evil pusher's legs. Poor Mally, we wouldn't even touch a joint. Lloyd Beatty, We used to be a good mate of yours years ago, before every confounded he'd been shagging his ain sister, gied us a meek nod. In the club, people have big smiles for the old man and old lady, and strained ones for me. I was conscious of some whispers and nods, followed by silences as we took a table. Feyther slaps us on the back and winks, and Ma gives us a heart-wrenchingly tender and smotheringly indulgent smile. Nay, doot about it. They're no bad old cunts. I love the fuck out of the bastards, if the truth be telt. I think about how they must feel about me having turned out the way I have. Fucking shame. Still, I'm here. Pair Leslie's never gonna see wee Dawn grow up. Les and sick fuck and Leslie, they say she's in the Southern General in Glasgow now, on life support. Paracetamol job. She went through to Glasgow to get away for the smack scene in Muirhouse and ended up moving into Postle with Skreel and Garbo. There's nae escape for some fuckers. Harry Keary was Les's best option. Swanee was his customary sensitive self. Fucking Ouija's get all the best gear these days. They're on that pure pharmaceutical shite while we're reduced to crushing up any fucking Jack and Jills we can get our hands on. Good gear's wasted on these cunts. Most of them didn't even inject. Smoking and snorting skag of fucking waste, he hissed contemptuously. And that fucking Leslie, she should be turning the white swan onto that gear. Does she punt any at my way? No. She just sits feeling sorry for herself about her bairn. Shame in that, Ken, didn't he get us wrong? Thing is, there's opportunities and all. Freedom for the responsibility of being a single parent and that. You'd think she'd lap up the chance to spread her wings. Freedom for responsibility. That sounds good. I'd like freedom for the responsibility sitting in the fucking club. Jockey Linton comes over to join us. Jockey's puss is shaped like an egg on its side. He's got thick black hair, flecked with silver. He wears a blue shirt which is short-sleeved and exposes his tattoos. On one arm he's got Jockey in a Lane, True Love Will Never Die, and Scotland, with a lion rampant on the other. Unfortunately, true love did bite the dust, and Elaine shot the craw a long time ago. Jockey's now living with Margaret, who obviously hates the tattoo, but every time he goes to get another one per hour, he bottles out, making excuses about the fear of HIV with the needles. It's obviously shite. A feeble cop-out, because he still huds a candle for Elaine. The thing I remember most about Jockey is he's singing at parties. He used to sing George Harrison's My Sweet Lord, which was his party piece. Jockey never quite mastered the lyrics to it, though. He only kept the title, and I Really Want to See You, Lord, and the rest was da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Davy, Kathy, looking gorgeous, the night doll! Dinna you be turning your back renting, or I'll be running away with her. Glasgow Keely that ye are.
Jockey spat out his syllables Kalashnikov style. The old girl tries to look coy, her expression making us feel a bit queasy inside. I just hide behind a pint of lager, and for once in my puff I'm glad to observe the total silence that the club bingo game imposes. My customary irritation at having my every word policed by morons is now replaced by a feeling of sheer bliss. I should have had a house, but I didn't want to speak, to draw any attention to myself whatsoever. It seemed, though, that Fate and Jockey were determined not to respect my desire for anonymity. The cunt notices my cared.
House! That's you, Mark! He's got hoose! Our here! Wasn't he even gonna shout out, come on, son! Get the fucking grip of yourself!
I smiled benignly at Jockey, all the time wishing a prompt and violent death on the nosy cunt. The lager is like the contents of a bunged-up latrine shot through with CO2. After one gulp, a violent, retching spasm seizes us. Feather slaps my back. I canny touch my pint after this, but Jockey and the old man are flinging them back steadily. Margaret comes in, and before very long, she and the old girl are making good progress on the vodka and tonics and the Carlsberg specials. The band strikes up, which I at first welcome as a respite for talking. Mama and Feather get up to dance to Sultans of Swing. "I like that Dire Straits," Margaret observes. "They appeal to the young ones, but all ages like them." I'm almost tempted to vigorously refute this cretinous statement. However, I content myself with talking football with Jockey.
"Rocked, but I want shooting. That's the worst Scotland squad I've ever seen," Jockey states, jaw jutting forward.
"It's no really his fault. You can only pish with the cock you've got. Who else is there?"
"Aye, right enough. But I'd like to see John Robertson get an extended run. Deserves it. Scotland's most consistent striker."
We continue our ritualistic argument, me trying to find even a semblance of passion which would breathe life into it, and failing miserably. I note that Jockey and Margaret had been briefed to ensure that I didn't try to slip away. They all took shifts to mind us, the four of them never up dancing at the same time. Jockey and my ma to the Wanderer, Margaret and my Feather to Jolene, ma and Feather again to Rolling Down the River, Margaret and Jockey to Save the Last Dance for Me. As the fat singer launches into Song Sung Blue, the old lady pulls us onto the dance floor like I was a rag doll. Sweat spills out of us under the lights as Ma struts her stuff and I self-consciously twitch. The humiliation intensifies as I realise that the cunts are doing a Neil Diamond medley. I have to go through Forever in Blue Jeans, Love on the Rocks and Beautiful Noise. By the time Sweet Caroline comes on, I'm ready to collapse. The old lady forces us to ape the rest of the Radjis in the place by waving my hands in the air as they sing, "Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching you, touching me." I glance back at the table, and Jockey is in his element, a Leith Al Jolson. After this ordeal, there's another to follow. The old man slips us a tenner and tells us to get around in. Social skills development and confidence-building training are obviously on the agenda tonight. I take the tray up to the bar and join the queue. I look over to the door, feeling the crisp note in my hand. A few grains worth. I could be at Seekers or Johnny Swan's, the Mother Superior's, in half an hour, shooting my way out of this nightmare. Then I clock the old man standing by the doorway, looking us over like he was a bouncer and I was a potential troublemaker, only his role was to stop us from leaving, rather than to fling us out. This is a perverse gig. I turn back into the queue and I see this lassie, Tricia McKinley, who I'd been at school with. I'd rather no talk to anybody, but I can't ignore her now as her smile is expanding in recognition. "All right, Tricia."
"Oh, hiya, Mark. Long time no see. How you doing?"
"No so bad. Yourself?"
"You see it all. This is Jerry. Jerry, this is Mark. He was in my class at school. Seems a long time ago now, eh?"
She introduces me to a surly, sweaty gorilla who grunts in my direction. A nod.
"Aye, certainly does. Still see Simon?"
"Oh," the man to ask after sick boy. "It makes us ill."
"Aye. He was up at the house today. He's away to Paris soon, then Corsica."
Tricia smiles, and the gorilla looks on in disapproval. The guy has a face that just disapproves of the world in general and looks ready for a square go with it. I'm sure he's one of the Sutherlands. Tricia could definitely have done better for herself. Loads of punters at school used to fancy her. I used to hang around her in the hope that people would think I was gone out with her, in the hope that I would be, by a sort of osmosis. I once started to believe my own propaganda and got a healthy slap in the puss when I tried to put my hand up her jersey when we were up the disused railway line. Sick boy fucked her, though, the cunt.
"He always got a rendezvous, Simon," she says with a wistful smile. "Daddy Simon
sure did. Stoat the bar, pimping, drug dealing, extorting money for people, that's your Simon."
The bitterness in my voice surprised us. Sick Boy was my best mate. Well, Sick Boy and Spud, and maybe Tommy. Why am I giving the cunt such a bad press? Is it solely because he's neglect to parental duties, or indeed his lack of acknowledgement of parental status? It's more likely because I envy the cunt. He doesn't care. Because he doesn't care, he can't be hurt. Never. Whatever the reason, it freaks Tricia.
See you, Mark.
They leave quickly.
Tricia carrying the tray of drinks and the Sutherland gorilla, or I think he was a Sutherland, looking back at us, his knuckles nearly scraping the varnish of the dance floor.
It was who he ordered bad-mouthing Sick Boy like that. I just hate it when the cunt gets off scot-free and I'm painted as the big villain of the piece. I suppose that's just my perception of things. Sick Boy has his anxieties, his personal pain. He also probably has more enemies than me. He undoubtedly does. Still, what the fuck? I take the drinks to the table.
"All right, son?" Ma asks.
"Brand new, Ma, brand new," I says, trying to sound like Jimmy Cagney and failing pathetically. Like a day with mace things.
Still, failure, success, what is it?
We gives a fuck. We all live, then we die, in quite a short space of time and all. That's it. End of fucking story.
Chapter 23. Bang to Rights. It's a beautiful day. That seems to mean concentrate on the job at hand. My first burial. Somebody says, "Come on, Mark." A gentle voice. I step forward and grab a length of the cord. I help my father and my uncles, Charlie and Dougie, to lower the remains of my brother into the ground. The army's put up the hi-rise for this do. "Leave it to us," the softly spoken army welfare officer told Ma. "Leave it to us." "Yes, this is the first burial I've been to. Usually it's cremations these days. I wonder what's in the box. No much of Billy, that's for sure." I look out at my ma and Sharon, Billy's bird, who are being comforted by an assortment of aunties. Lenny, Peasbo and Naz, Billy's mates, are here, along with some of his squaddy pals. "Billy boy, Billy boy. Hello, hello, we are the..." It's nothing to do with. I keep thinking of that old Walker's Brother number, the one mid-year covered. "There's no regrets, no tears goodbye, I don't want you back, etc., etc. I can't feel remorse, only anger and contempt. I seethed when I saw that fucking Union Jack on his coffin, and watched that smarmy, wimpy cunt of an officer, obviously out of his depth here, trying to talk to my ma. Worse still, these Glasgow cunts, the old boys' side, are through here en masse. They're fairly shite about how he died in the service of his country and all that servile Hun crap. Billy was a silly cunt, pure and simple. No a hero, no a martyr, just a daft cunt. A fit of giggles hits us, threatening to completely overwhelm us. I nearly couped our laughing hysterically when my father's brar, Charlie, grabbed us by the arm. He looked hostile, but that cunt always does. Effie, his wife, pulls the fucker away, saying, "The boy's upset. It's just his wee chick. The boy's upset. Get a fucking wash, you soap-dodging Ouija cunts." "Billy boy. That's what these cunts called him as a laddie. It was, all right, Billy boy." With me skulking behind the couch, it was a grudging, "Aye, son." "Billy boy, Billy boy. I remember you sitting on Topias, me helplessly pinned to the flare, windpipe constricted to the width of a straw, praying as the oxygen drained from my lungs and brain that Ma would return for prestos before you crushed the life out of my skinny body. The smelly pish for your genitals,
a damp patch on your short trousers. Was it really that exciting, Billy boy?
I hope so. I can't really grudge it now. He always had a problem that way. Those inappropriate discharges of feces and urine that used to drive Ma to distraction. Who's the best team, you'd ask us, crushing, digging or twisting harder? No respite for me until I says, Hearts. Even after we'd fucked you 7-0 on New Year's Day at Tynecastle, you still made me say, Hearts. I suppose I should have been flattered that an utterance from me carried more weight than the actual result. My beloved brother was on Her Majesty's service, on patrol near their base at Crossmaglen in Ireland. The part under British rule. They had left their vehicle to examine this roadblock when pow, zap, bang, zowie, and they were no more. Just 3 weeks before the end of this tour of duty. He died a hero, they says. I remember that song, Billy Don't Be a Hero. In fact, he died a spare prick in a uniform, walking along a country road with a rifle in his hand. He died an ignorant victim of imperialism, understanding fuck all about the myriad circumstances which led to his death. That was the biggest crime. He understood fuck all about it. All he had to guide him through this great adventure in Ireland, which led to his death, was a few vaguely formed sectarian sentiments. The cunt died as he lived, completely fucking scoobied. His death was good for me. He made the news at 10. In Warholian terms, the cunt had a posthumous 15 minutes of fame. People offered us sympathy, and although it was misguided, it was nice to accept anyway. You didn't want to disappoint folk. Some ruling class cunt, a junior minister or something, says in his Oxbridge voice how Billy was a brave young man. He was exactly the kind of cunt they'd have branded as a cowardly thug if he was in Civvy Street rather than on Her Majesty's service. This fucking walking abortion says that his killers will be ruthlessly hunted down. So they fucking should, all the way to the fucking Houses of Parliament. Savour small victories against this white trash tool of the rich that's no, no, no. Billy being tormented by the Sutherland brothers and entourage, who certainly made him quiver, ha-fucking-ha, as they danced around him singing, Your brother's a spastic, one of the great Leith Street hits of the 70s, generally performed when the legs got too tired to sustain the 22-a-side game of football. Were they talking about Davy, or perhaps even me? Didn't matter. They didn't see me looking down for the bridge. Billy, your head stayed bowed. Impotence. How does it feel, Billy boy? Not good. I know, because... It's weird by the graveside. Spud's here somewhere, clean, just out of Sockton. Tommy and aw. It's crazy, Spud looking healthy, and Tommy looking like death warmed up. Complete role reversal. Davy Mitchell, a good mate of Tommy's. A guy we I once worked with on site as an apprentice chippy way back has shown up. Davy caught HIV for this lassie. Brave of the cunt to come. That's fucking real bravery. Begbie, just when I could make use of the cunt's evil presence and capacity to cause chaos, is on holiday in Benidorm. I could do with his immoral support vis-a-vis my Ouija relations. Sick boy's still in France, living out his fantasies. Billy boy, I remember sharing that room. How the fuck I did it for all the years beat. The sun has a power. You can't understand why people worship it. It's there. We know the sun. We can see it and we need it. You had first call in the room, Billy. 15 months my senior. Might is right. You'd bring gaunt-faced, vicious-eyed, gum-chewing lassies back to fuck, or at least heavy pet. They'd look at me with android contempt as you banished me, whoever was with me, and my subutio into the lobby. I particularly recall the needless crunching of one Liverpool and two Sheffield Wednesday players under your heel. Unnecessary, but then total domination requires its symbolism, eh, no, Billy boy? My cousin Nina looks intensely shaftable. She's got long dark hair and is wearing an ankle-length black coat. Seems to be a bit of a goth. Noting some of Willie's squaddy pals and my Ouija uncles getting on well, I find myself whistling The Foggy Dew. One squaddy with big protruding front teeth cottons on and looks at us in surprise and then anger, so I blows the cunt a kiss. He stares at me for a bit, then looks away, shit up. Good wabbit season.
Billy boy, I was your other spastic brother, the one who'd never had a ride, as you'd tell your mate Lenny. Lenny'd laugh and laugh until he'd almost have an asthma attack. It wasn't particularly Billy, no, you stupid fucking cunt.
I give Nina a broad wink and she smiles, embarrassed. My father's been clocking this and he steams out at me.
One fucking bit of crap at you and that's us finished, right?
His eyes were tired, sunk deep into their sockets. There was a sad and unsettling vulnerability about him I'd never seen before. I wanted to say so much to the man, but I resented him for allowing the circus to take place. See you's up the house, Father. I'm going to see Ma. An overheard conversation in the kitchen. Fuck knows when. Father goes,
"There's something wrong with that laddie, Cathy. Sitting in all the time, it's no natural. I mean, look at Billy."
Ma says back, "The laddie's just different, Davy, that's all." Different for Billy. Not a Billy boy. You won't know him by his noise, but by his silence. When he comes for you, he won't come screaming, announcing his intentions, but he'll come. Hello, hello, goodbye. I get a lift for Tommy, Spud and Mitch. They are nae for coming in. They depart quickly. I see my old lady delirious, being helped out of the taxi by her sister Irene and sister-in-law Alice. The Ouija aunties are clucking around in the background. I can hear these horrible accents. Bad enough on a man, fucking revolting on a woman. These hatchet-faced old boots didn't look comfortable. Obviously they're mair in their niche at the funeral of an elderly relative when there's goodies up for grabs. Ma grabs the air macharn, Billy's bird. He's got a big bun in her oven. Why the fuck did people aye grab each other's arms at funerals?
He would have made an honest woman of you, hen. You were aye was the one for him.
The way she says it, it's like she was trying to convince herself as much as Sharon. Per Ma. 2 years ago she had 3 sons, now she's only got one, who's a junkie. The game's no straight.
"Do you think the army'll have anything for me?"
I heard Sharon asking my Auntie Effie as we got into the house.
"I'm carrying his bairn. It's Billy's bairn," she pleads.
"Do you think the moon's made out of green fucking knob cheese?" I remark. Fortunately, everyone seems too lost in themselves to pick it up. Like Billy, he started to ignore me when I became invisible.
"Billy, my contempt for you just grew over the years. It displaced the fear, just sort of squeezed it out, like pus for a pluke.
Of course, there's the blade. A great leveler, very good at negating physical assets, as Eck Wilson found out to his cost in 2nd year. You loved us for that, once you got out of your shock, respected and loved me as a brother for the first time. I despised you more than ever. You knew that your strength became superfluous once I'd discovered the blade. You knew that, you crappin' bastard. The blade and the bomb. Just like the gnaw. No, the fucking bomb. No." My embarrassment and discomfort grows. People fill their glasses and say what a great cunt Billy was. I can't really think of anything good to say about him, so I shut up. Unfortunately, one of his squaddy mates, the rabbit-toothed punter I blew a kiss at, sidles up to me.
"You were his brother," he says,
choppers hanging out to dry. I might have guessed another Ouija orange bigot. Nae wonder he's hit off with Feather's side. It pit us on the spot, every cunt's eyes focus on us.
"Dwat that pesky wabbit!"
"Indeed I was, as you say, his brother," I jocularly agree. I can feel the resentment mounting up against us. I have to play to the crowd.
The best way I knew to strike a chord without compromising too much to the sickening hypocrisy, perversely peddled as decency, which fills a room, is to stick to the clichés. People love them at this time, because they become real and actually mean something. Billy and me never agreed on that much. Ah, well, vive la différence, said Kenny, an uncle on Mama's side trying to be helpful. But one thing we had in common was that we both liked a good bevy and a good crack. If he can see us now, he'll be laughing his head off at us sitting here all moosey-faced. He'd be saying, enjoy yourselves, for God's sake. I've got friends and family here. We've no seen each other for ages. An exchange of cards. To Billy, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Except between 3 and 4:40 on New Year's Day, for Mark. Mark, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Billy, HMFC, OK. To Billy, Happy Birthday, from Mark. Then Billy and Sharon are, Mark, Happy Birthday, from Billy and Sharon. In Sharon's handwriting, which is like, the Ouija white trash that were my father's family came through for the Orange Walk every July and occasionally when Rangers were at Easter Road or Tynecastle. I wish the cunts would stay in Drumchapel. They receive my touching little tribute to Billy well enough, though, and all nod solemnly. All except Charlie. We saw through my mood. It's all a fucking game to you, ain't it, son? If you must know, yes. I feel sorry for you. He shook his head. No, you didn't, I tell him. He walks away, still shaking his head. More McEwan's export and whiskey follows. Auntie Effie starts to sing a nasal country-style whine. I move over to Nina. You've really blossomed into a wee honey, can't it? I drunkenly slaver. She looks at me as if she's heard it all before. I was going to suggest that we sneak away out of Foxy's or back to my flat at Montgomery Street. Is it against the law to shag your cousin? Probably. They've got laws for stopping your day and everything else. Shame about Billy, she says. I can tell she thinks I'm a total wanker. Of course, she's completely right. I thought every cunt over 20 was a toss and no worth speaking to until I hit 20. The more I see, the more I think I was right. After that, it's all ugly compromise, all timid surrender, progressively until death. Unfortunately, Charlie, or Chicky, has clocked the solicitous nature of my conversation and moves in to protect Nina's virtue. Not that she needs the assistance of a fat soap dodger. The bastard gestures us aside. When I ignore him, he takes my arm. He's pretty bevied. His whisper is hard, and I can smell the whiskey on his breath. Listen, son, if you don't get on your fucking bike, I'm gonna tan your jaw. If it wasn't for your feather there, I'd have done it a long time ago. I don't like you, son. I never have. Your brother was 10 times a man you'll ever be, you fucking junkie. If you knew the misery you've caused your ma and da... You can speak frankly, I cut in, anger throbbing in my chest, but nonetheless contained by a delicious glee that comes from knowing that I've upset the cunt. Stay cool. It's the only way to fuck a self-righteous bastard over. Oh, I'll speak frankly, all right, Mr. University Smart Cunt. I'll knock you through that fucking wall. His chunky Indian-inked fist was just a few inches from my face. My grip tensed on the whiskey glass I was huddin'. I wasn't going to let the cunt touch us with his fucking hands. If he moved, he was getting this glass. I pushed his raised hand aside. If you did give us a kick in, you'd be doing me a favour. I'd just have a wank about it later on. We university dropout smart cunt junkies are kinky that way, 'cause that's all you're worth, you fucking trash. You're also taking a wee bit for granted. You want to go outside, just say the fucking word. I gestured at the door. The room seemed to shrink to the size of Billy's coffin and be populated only by myself and Chick. But there were others.
People were looking round at us now. The cunt pushed us gently in the chest.
"We've had one funeral in the family the day. We're no wanting another."
My Uncle Kenny came over and pulled us away. "Ignore these orange bastards. Come on, Mark. Look at your ma. It would fucking kill her if you got involved here. It's Billy's funeral. Remember where you are, for fuck's sakes." Kenny was all right. Well, a bit of a fucking arse, if the truth be told. But for all their faults, I'd rather have an icer than a soap dodger. I come for some stock right enough. Icer papish bastards on my ma's side, soap dodging orange cunts on my father's. I gulped at the whiskey, enjoying the burning sour taste of it in my throat and chest, wincing as it hit my queasy stomach. I went through to the toilet. Sharon, Billy's bird, was coming out. I barred her way. Sharon and me have maybe spoken about half a dozen sentences to each other. She was drunk and dazed, her face flushed and bloated with alcohol and pregnancy. "Hold on now, Sharon. You and me need to have a wee blether, likes. It's pretty confidential in here." I usher her into the toilet and lock the door behind us. I start to feel her up while rabbit in a load of shite about how we have to stick together at a time like this. I'm feeling her lump and gone on about how much responsibility I felt towards my unborn niece or nephew. We start kissing and I move my hand down, feeling the visible panty lines through the cotton material of her maternity dress. I was soon fingering her fanny and she had got my prick out of my trousers. I was still bullshitting, telling her that I'd always admired her as a person and a woman, which she doesn't really need to hear because she's gone down on us. But it's somehow comforting to say. She takes my semi into her mouth and I firm up quickly. There's no doubt about it, she gives a good blowjob. I think about her doing this with my bra and wonder what had happened to his prick in the explosion. If only Billy could see us now, I'm thinking, but in a surprisingly reverential way. I wondered if he could and hoped so. It was the first good thoughts about him I'd had. I withdraw just before coming and guide Sharon into the doggy position. I hike up her dress and pull her panties down. Her heavy belly sags towards the flare. I try to put it into her arsehole first, but it's too tight and it hurts my knob end to force it. "Know that way, know that way," she's saying. So I stopped my rummage for some cream and scooped my fingers into her fanny. She has a powerful ivy smell. Then again, my cock also smells pretty foul and flecks and knob cheese are visible on the helmet. I've never really been too much into personal hygiene. Probably the soap dodger in us, or the junkie. I concur with Sharon's wishes and fuck her in the fanny. It's a wee bit like throwing the proverbial sausage up a close, but I find my stroke and she tightens up. I think about how close she is to popping and how far up I am, and I can see myself sticking it in the fetus's mouth. Some concept, a shag and a blowjob simultaneously. It torments us. They say that a shag is good for an unborn child to get the circulation of blood, or some shite. The least I can do is take an interest in the bairn's welfare. A knock on the door, followed by Effie's nasal voice.
"What are yous doing in there?"
"It's all right. Sharon's being sick. Too much bevy in her condition," I groaned.
"Are you seeing to her, son?"
"Aye, I'm seeing to her," I panted as Sharon's groans grew louder.
"All right, well."
I blurt out my muck and pull out. I gently push her prostrate, helping her turn over and scoop her huge milky tits out of her dress. I smuggle into them like a bairn. She starts stroking my head. I feel wonderful, so at peace. "That was fucking Barry," I gasp contentedly.
"Will we keep seeing each other now?" she says. "Eh?"
There's a desperate, pleading edge to her voice. What a fucking rage!
I sat up and kissed her face, which was like a swollen, overripe piece of fruit. I didn't want to get heavy here. The truth was, Sharon repulsed me now. This Raj thinks that with one fuck she can substitute one bra for the other. Thing is, she's probably no far wrong. We have to get up, Sharon. Get cleaned like skin. They wouldn't understand if they caught us. They don't know anything. I know that you're a good lassie, Sharon, but they didn't understand fuck all. I ken you're a nice laddie, she said supportively, but without a great deal of conviction. She was certainly far too good for Billy. Then again, Myra Hindley or Margaret Thatcher were far too good for Billy. She was caught in this get-a-man, get-a-bairn, get-a-hoose shite that lassies get drummed into them, and had nae real chance of defining herself outside of they mashed tatty for brains terms of reference. There was another knock at the door.
"If yez dinna open this door, I'm gonna knock it doon." It was Charlie's son, Cammy, a fucking young policeman who looked like the Scottish Cup, big jug ears, nae chin, slender neck. The cunt obviously thought that I was shooting up. Well, I was, but no in the sense he imagined.
"I'm all right. We'll be out in a minute."
Sharon wipes herself and tugs up her pants and rearranges things. I'm fascinated at the speed with which she moves for a heavily pregnant lassie. I couldn't believe I'd just shagged her. I'd feel bad about it the morn, but, as sick boys prone to saying, the morn takes care of itself. There isn't an embarrassment in the world that canny be erased by a bit of blether and a few bevies. I open the door.
"Take it easy, Dixony Doc Green. No seen a lassie up the kite before."
His glacket, open-mouthed expression inspired my instant contempt. I didn't like the vibes, so I took Sharon back to my flat. We just talked. She told us a lot of things that I wanted to hear, things my ma and feyther never knew and would hate to ken. How Billy was a cunt to her, how he battered her on occasions, humiliated her, and generally treated her like an exceptionally foul piece of shite.
"What did you stay with him for?"
"He was my felly. You always think it'll be different, that you can change them, that you can make a difference."
I understood that. But it's wrong. The only fuckers that ever made a difference to Billy were the provos. And they were cunts as well. I've no illusions about them as freedom fighters. The bastards made my brother into a pile of cat food. But they only pulled the switch. His death was conceived by these orange cunts, coming through every July with their sashes and flutes, filling Billy's stupid head with nonsense about crown and country and all that shite. They'll go home chuffed for the day. They can tell all their mates about how one of the family died, murdered by the IRA, while defending Ulster. It'll fuel their pointless anger, get them bought drinks in pubs, and establish their DOS bastard credibility with other sectarian arseholes. I didn't want any cunt fucking about with my brar. Those were the words Billy Boy spoke to Pops Graham and Dougie Hood as they came into the pub hassling me, determined that I had to pay for my drugs. Billy's statement, oh yes, delivered with such clarity and assurance that it went beyond a threat. My irritants just looked at each other and skulked off out of the pub. I sniggered. So did Spud. We were high and cared about fuck all. Billy Boy sneered at us, something like, "You're a fucking arse," and joined a couple of his mates. We looked disappointed that Pops and Dougie had fucked off, depriving them of an excuse for a swedge. I still giggled. "Thanks, guys, it's been..." Billy Boy told me that I was ruining my life with that shite. He told me this on numerous occasions. It's been real. Fuck. 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 What's it all about? Oh, Billy. Oh, fuck's sake. I didn't. Sharon was right. It's hard to change people. Every cause needs its martyrs, though. So now I'm wishing that she would fuck off so I can get to my stash, cook up a shot, and get a hit. In the cause of oblivion. Junk Dilemmas Number 67. Deprivation's relative. There are bairns starving to death, dying every second like flies. The fact that this is happening in another place doesn't negate that fundamental truth. In the time it takes us to crush up these pills, cook them and inject them, thousands of bairns in other countries, and maybe a few in this yin, will be dead. In the time it takes us to do this, thousands of rich bastards will be thousands of pounds richer as investments ripen. Crushing pills up, what a fucking dossied. I should really leave the Jack and Jills to the stomach. Brain and vein are too fragile to carry that stuff direct. Like Dennis Ross. Dennis had a great hit for that whiskey he injected into his cell. Then his eyes started rolling, blood flooded for his nostrils, and that was Denny. Once you see the blood for your nose hit the flare at that rate, the gig's over. Junkie machismo. No. Junkie need. I'm fit, all right. Shiting my kicks. But the me that's shiting it is a different me to the one that's crushing up the pills. The me that's crushing up the pills says that death can't be worse than doing nought to arrest this consistent decline. That me always wins the arguments. There's never any real dilemmas with junk. They only come when you run out. Part 5. Exile. Chapter 24. London Crawling. No go. Where the fuck are the cunts? My own bastard fault. Should have phoned to tell them I was coming down. Well, the surprise is mine. Nae fuckers in. The black door has a coldness, a stern, deathly front, which seems to say to us that they've been gone a long time and will only be back for a longer yin, if ever. I deep through the letterbox, but I can't see if there's any envelopes at the bottom of the door. I boot the door in frustration. The woman across the landing, a mumpy hoor as I remember, opens her door and pokes her head out. She stares at us as if to ask us a question. I ignore her.
They ain't in. Ain't been in for a couple of days, she tells us,
looking suspiciously at my sports bag as if there was explosive contained in it. Nice one, I gruffly mumble, turning my head ceiling words in exasperation, hoping that this show of desperation will encourage the woman to say something like,
I know you. You used to stay there. You must be exhausted, travelling all the way down from Scotland. Come in, have a nice cup of tea, and wait for your friends.
What she does say is,
Nah, ain't seen them for at least 2 days.
Cunt. Fuck. Bastard. Shite. They could be anywhere. They could be nowhere. They could be back at any time. They might never be back. I walk down Hammersmith Broadway, London seeming strange and alien. After only a 3 month absence, as familiar places do when you've been away. It's as if everything is a copy of what you knew before, similar, yet somehow lacking in its usual qualities, a bit like the way things are in a dream. They say you have to live in a place to know it, but you have to come fresh to it to really see it. I remember walking along Princes Street with Spud. We both hate walking along that hideous street, deadened by tourists and shoppers, the twin curses of modern capitalism. I looked up at the castle and thought, it's just another building to us. It registers in our heads just like the British Home Stores or Virgin Records. We were heading to these places on a shoplifting spree. But when you come back out of Waverley Station after being away for a bit, you think, hey, this isn't bad. Everything in the street today seems soft focus. It's probably lack of sleep and lack of drugs. The pub sign is a new one, but its message is old. The Britannia. Rule Britannia. I've never felt British, because I'm not. It's ugly and artificial. I've never really felt Scottish either, though. Scotland the brave, my arse. Scotland the shite and cunt. We'd throttle the life out of each other for the privilege of rimming some English aristocrat's piles. I've never felt a fucking thing about countries other than total disgust. They should abolish the fucking lot of them. Kill every fucking parasite politician that ever stood up and mouthed lies and fascist platitudes in a suit and a smarmy smile. The board tells us that there is a gay skinheads night on in the back bar. Cults and subcultures segment and cross matrix in a place like this. You can be freer here, no because it's London, but because it isn't Leith. We're all slags on holiday. In the public bar, I scan for a familiar face. The layout and decor of the place has radically changed, for the worse. What was once a good, grotty local where you could fling beer over your mates or get sucked off in the women's or men's toilets is now a frighteningly sanitised hole. A few locals with hard, bemused faces and cheap clays cling to a corner of the bar like shipwrecked survivors to driftwood as yuppies guffaw loudly. Still at work, always in the office, but with alcohol instead of phones. This place is now geared up to supplying all-day meals to workers in the offices that continue to encroach into the borough. Davo and Susie wouldn't drink in a soulless toilet like this. One of the barmen, though, looks vaguely familiar. "Does Paul Davis still drink in here?" I ask him.
"You what, Jock? The coloured geezer that plays for the Arsenal?"
He laughs. "No, this is a big scouser. Dark, spiked hair, nose like a fucking ski slope. You couldn't miss this guy."
"Right. Yeah, I know the geezer. Davo. Hangs around with that bird, little girl, short black hair. No, I ain't seen that crowd in here for ages. Don't even know if they're still on the manor."
I drink a pint of fizzy pish and crack with a guy about his new customers.
"Thing is, Jock, most of them geezers ain't even genuine yuppies."
He disdainfully gestures over to a crowd of suits in the corner.
"Mostly fucking shiny-arsed clerks or commission-based insurance salesmen that get an handful of fucking rice each week in wages. It's all fucking image, innit? These cats are all up to their fucking eyes in debt, strutting around a fucking city in expensive suits, pretending that they're on 50k a year. Most of them ain't even got a five-figure salary, have they?"
There was a lot in what the guy said, bitter as the cunt was. There was certainly mere dosh kicking about down here than up the road, but one thing the cunts down here had swallowed was the idea that all you had to do was to look the part, and it would all come your way, which was fucking shite. I've known skimmy junkies in Edinburgh with a healthier asset-to-debt ratio than some two-waged, heavily mortgaged couples down here. It'll hit the fan one day. There are sack loads of repossession orders in the post. I go back up to the flat. Still no sign of the cunts. The woman across the way comes back out.
"You won't find them in."
Her voice is smug and gloating. What a cunt of the first order this old slag is. A black cat meanders past her, out onto the landing.
"Chowta! Chowta! Come here, you bleeding little!"
She picks the cat up and holds it protectively to her bosom like a baby, staring at us bitterly, as if I somehow intended to harm the bag of shite. I fucking hate cats, nearly as bad as I hate dogs. I advocate the banning of the use of animals as pets and the extermination of all dogs, except a few, which could be exhibited in a zoo. That's one of the few things that me and Sick Boy consistently agree about. Cunts. Where the fuck are they? I go back down to the pub and have another couple of pints. It's fucking soul-destroying. What the bastards have done to this place. The nights we used to have in here. It's like the past has been eradicated along with the old fittings. Without thinking consciously, I've left the pub and I'm walking back the way I came, towards Victoria. I stop off at a payphone, pull out some loose change in my battered address book. Time to look for alternative digs. Could be dodgy. I've fucked up with Stevie or Stella. No way I'd be welcome back there. Andreas is back in Greece. Caroline is on holiday in Spain. Tony, stupid fucking DOS cunt Tony, is with Sick Boy, who's out of France, back up in fucking Edinburgh. I forgot to get the cunt's keys, and the bastard forgot to remind us. Charlene Hill. She's Brixton. First choice. Might even get a ride, if I play my cards right. Could certainly day with one. That's what being straight, well, straight-ish, does to you. Torture.
Hello?
Another woman's voice. Hi, can I speak to Charlene?
Charlene? She don't live here anymore. Don't know where she is. Stockwell, I think. Ain't got an address. Hold on. Mick! Mick! You got Charlene's address? Charlene! Nah, sorry, ain't got it.
No, my fucking day. Has to be Nixie.
No, no, no Brian Nixon. Gone, gone.
An Asian voice.
Got an address for him, mate. No, gone, gone, no Brian Nixon.
Where's he staying, Lexi, but?
What, I cannot understand you. Where is my friend Brian Nixon staying? No Brian Nixon, no drugs. Go, go.
The cunt slams the phone down on us. It's getting late, and this city has shut me out. An Alco with a Glasgow accent taps 20 pence for us.
You're a fucking good boy, I'll tell you that, son, he groans. You're all right, Jock, I tell him,
in my best Cockney. Other Scots in London are a pain in the arse, particularly Ouija's, who irritate us at the best of times with their nosy cunt patter, which they pretend is friendliness. The last thing I want right now is to be stuck with a fucking soap dodger in tow. I think about getting the 38 or 55 up to Hackney and calling on Mel at Dalston. If Mel's no in and the cunt's no on the phone, then my boats are well and truly burned. Instead, I find myself pining to get into the all-night cinema in Victoria. It shows porno movies throughout the night until 5 a.m. It's a crash pad for every lowlife under the sun. Winos, junkies, vagrants, sex fiends, psychos, they all converge here at night. I pledged to myself that I'd never spend a night here again after the last time. A few years back I was in here with Nixie, and some boy got stabbed. The police came and just lifted every cunt they could get their hands on, including us. We had a quart of hash and had to eat the lot. We couldn't even fucking speak by the time they got round to interviewing us down the station. They kept us in the cells overnight. Next day they took us round to Bow Street Magistrates Court, it's right next to the Nick, and fined every cunt who was too incoherent to give evidence we a breach of the peace. Nixie and me got stung for 30 bar each, when it was 30 bar. Here I am again, though. If anything, the place has gone downhill since my last visit. All the films are pornographic, except for one excruciatingly violent documentary where various animals tear each other apart in exotic locations. Its graphic nature takes it a million miles for David Attenborough's jobs.
You black bastards, fucking black bastards,
roars a Scots voice as a group of natives hurl spears into the side of a big bison-like creature. A racist Scottish animal lover. Odds on he's a Hun.
Dirty fucking jungle bunnies,
a sycophantic Cockney voice adds. What a fucking place to be. I tried to get into the films to take my mind off the screaming and heavy breathing going on around us. The best film is a German one overdubbed with American English. The plot is no great shakes. It concerns this young lassie in a Bavarian costume who gets fucked in a variety of ways and locations by almost every male and a few of the females on the farm. The set pieces are quite imaginative, though, and I'm getting into it. These images are obviously the nearest most cunts in this dive ever come to sex, although, having said that, I can tell by the sounds that some men and women and men are fucking. I find I've got a hard-on. and I'm even tempted to have a wank, but the next film crushes my erection. It's a British one, inevitably. It's set in a London office during the party season and is imaginatively entitled The Office Party.